Welcome everyone to the Apocalypse Podcast. I'm Steve. He is
Reverend Dr. Van Beek.
Don't you forget it, folks.
Don't ever forget it.
No, we will drive to your houses and remind you in a polite way. We'll knock on the door and say, this is Reverend Dr. Lawrence Van Beek.
Trick or treat, you know.
Yeah.
A little late.
And then we'll leave.
Lynn and I were looking up the names of the moons, because the names of the moons are something like it's like there's the harvest moon in September,
which
I thought was actually October. There is a blue corn moon. But then we discovered that there's all kinds of different names for the different moons. So every full moon has a name. So the one thing said this month is the beaver moon. I thought, well, that's not romantic.
Look at, there's the beaver moon.
It's like, the beaver moon. With the teeth.
The big pointy teeth. Our neighbors actually have a illuminated Christmas beaver. And I'm trying to think, when did the beaver become something you say, hey, let's put that out in the front yard for Christmas?
Yeah, they have the Christmas moose. And I thought that was a stretch.
Yeah, but still.
But the Christmas beaver, that's a little much. Yeah, that's too much.
Yeah. So,
it is the symbol of Canada, after all.
That's true. And in our town, occasionally, a deer will run through someone's yard and pick up Christmas lights and then wear it for the rest of the season as kind of a festive thing to do.
until their antlers fall off.
Which is
sometime in December.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they call December some of them call it the deer moon, because that's when they lose their antlers.
Oh, look at you. Not just good looking, not just talented, but a fount of knowledge as well.
Full of good information. Yeah.
Did I just sneak in the fact that you're good looking? Oh, that was interesting. Anyway, I'm back to my old ways again. Tonight, my friend, we're going to talk about Zechariah 9 and 10.
Yes, and we're doing 9 and 10 so that next week we can do 11 and 12, and then next week 13 and 14. Because my friend Steve said, we need to get through Zechariah before we break for Christmas.
It was a suggestion.
we've been too long in this book. Yeah. Yeah, so I'm all set to go at 9.
Okay.
And this is the usual prophecy guy, judgment on Israel's enemies.
Okay. Yeah. Well, fantastic. Let's do this. Chapter 9, starting at verse 1, folks. The word of the Lord is against the land of Hadrach. And will come to rest on Damascus. For the eyes of all people and all tribes of Israel are on the Lord, and on Hamath too, which borders on it, and on Tyre and Sidon. Though they are very skillful, Tyre has built herself a stronghold. She has heaped up silver like dust, and gold like the dirt of the streets. But the Lord will take away her possessions and destroy her power on the sea. She will be consumed by fire. Ashkelon will see it and fear. Gaza will writhe in agony. Ekron too, for her hope will wither. Gaza will lose her king. Ashkelon will be deserted. A mongrel people will occupy Ashdod. And I will put an end to the pride of the Philistines. I will take the blood from their mouths, the forbidden fruit from between their teeth. Those who are left will belong to our God, and will become a clan in Judah, and Akron will be like the Jebusites. But I will encamp at my temple to guard it against marauding forces. Never again will an oppressor overrun my people, for now I am keeping watch.
Yeah, so God said to the Philistines, look, on their first date, you know, it looks like you got something in your teeth.
Is that broccoli?
What is that in your teeth? So this is the usual prophecy guy just claiming God's punishment on Israel's enemies.
Hmm.
And some of these guys weren't always Israel enemies. So when you start this, you get Damascus. And remember, Damascus might be the oldest I don't know if that's true, but I'm going to say it anyway. That it might be the oldest continually named city of anywhere.
Hmm.
It was Damascus then, and it's Damascus now.
Okay.
Damascus has been, and Syria has always been there. It's been the capital of Syria all this time, which is really strange in the Middle East where everything's changing all the time.
Yeah.
So Damascus, of course, is the capital of Syria. And then Hamath is near Damascus. But then you get down to Tyre and Sidon. And Tyre and Sidon, they're the Phoenician cities.
Yeah.
Which is, by the way, modern-day Lebanon, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I've been told.
Mm-hmm.
And they were friends of Israel at one point. Remember, they helped with the building of the temple.
That's right. Yeah.
With the first one, I think. And they were seagoing peoples.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And so, but over the years, things have went well for them, and they just loaded up their possessions. And I don't know why, but for some reason, God says to them, "I'm going to destroy this on you guys."
Yeah.
Right. And then after that, he goes on and he talks about Ashkelon and Ekron and Gaza, which are Phoenician cities, which are the land of the not Phoenician, of the Philistines. Too many fist sounds. In you think it was all written by Tolkien the way it all sounds the same. But these are the Philistine cities. And he says Gaza's going to lose its king. Could be speaking about right now, you know,
yeah.
With the Gaza Strip,
right?
And so when you look at this, you go, you know, it's never gone well for Israel with their neighbors, and Israel has had pacts with these people from time to time,
mm-hmm.
and then these pacts break down and they cause trouble, and then Ashdod again is one, and mongrel people suggest mixed races.
Mm.
Which for us is not a big deal at all, but for them in that day, it was kind of a big deal, and for Jewish people it still is.
Yeah,
you know, to marry outside of your race is important, and he says I'll destroy the pride of them. I'll take away the forbidden fruit, and those that are left are going to become a clan in Judah, which is interesting, eh?
Mm-hmm.
And Ekron will be like the Jebusites. Now the Jebusites were the people around Jerusalem when they came in and they all dressed poor, remember? They were supposed to kill everybody in the land.
Right.
These guys dressed poor and said, "Oh, we're wayfarers from far away." And and they said to him, Well, okay, we'll make a pact with you." And then, "Oh, we tricked you," and they kept this pact, and these guys were just a thorn in their sides.
That's right.
For the whole time. So then where are we now? Yeah, and then you get down to the bottom. But I will encamp my temple to guard against marauding forces. Never again will the oppressor overrun my people. And that's the part that's really weird, because he does this thing about Israel's neighbors, a prophecy against the neighbors, and then he says he's going to build up the area around the temple, and no one would overrun it again. I'm keeping watch. Well, they rebuilt the second temple.
Right.
It has all kinds of trouble under Alexander the Great's guys. You know, they're doing stuff in the temple, and then it gets destroyed again by the Romans in AD 70. So it's one of those things where some of the prophecy guys will say, "There's stuff here that hasn't happened. There's stuff that has to still happen." But I look at it and go, "Yeah, I don't know if that's what God's talking about. He's saying this is the promise to you."
Right.
You know. And then things change. But then the next part totally points to Jesus.
Yeah. Okay. Well, look at Larry do that segue. Isn't that fantastic? Verse 9 now, folks. "Rejoice greatly, daughter Zion. Shout, daughter Jerusalem. See, your king comes to you, righteous and victorious, lowly and riding on a donkey, on a colt, the foal of a donkey. I will take away the chariots from Ephraim, the war horses from Jerusalem, and the battle bow will be broken. He will proclaim peace to the nations. His rule will extend from sea to sea, and from the river to the ends of the earth. As for you, because of the blood of my covenant with you, I will free your prisoners from the waterless pit. Return to your fortress, you prisoners of hope. Even now I announce that I will restore twice as much to you. I will bend Judah as I bend my bow. I will fill it with Ephraim. I will rouse your son Zion against your son's Greece, and will make you like a warrior's sword."
Yeah, so then there's that promise. And you know that first part of that promise is the one that's, verse 10 is repeated in the New Testament. He's lowly coming in on a donkey, on the foal of a donkey. And that's how Jesus rode into Jerusalem. So some of the scholars will then say, well, there must have been a fulfillment in Zechariah's time of this.
Hmm.
And then when Jesus comes in the same way, because this was a normal thing for kings to ride in this way.
Right.
The Jewish kings rode in on donkeys. This And I don't know if it was supposed to be more peaceful or not, but that's what he says, you know, that this is kind of a lowly and a peaceful thing that their kings did. Because they weren't the massive powerful kings, but they were under the rule of God.
Right, right. I'm with you now.
And so when Jesus rides in, they proclaim this same thing in the Gospels when Jesus comes in on Palm Sunday.
Okay.
So was this a prophecy of Jesus? The New Testament authors say it was.
Okay.
Well, was there another guy that fulfilled it? There could very well have been.
Yeah. All right, verse 14. Then the Lord will appear over them. His arrow will flash like lightning. The sovereign Lord will sound the trumpet. He will march in the storms of the south, and the Lord Almighty will shield them. They will destroy and overcome with sling stones. They will drink and roar as with wine. They will be full like a bowl, used for sprinkling the corners of the altar. The Lord their God will save his people on that day. As a shepherd saves his flock, they will sparkle in his land like jewels in a crown. How attractive and beautiful they will be. Grain will make the young men thrive, and new wine the young women.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So there's there's a time of peace coming.
Yeah.
And I don't know when you see it. I just don't know when you see it, but this is the prophecy. You know, he's going to sound his trumpet. They're going to overcome their enemies, and then they're going to eat bread and drink wine and, you know, just be able to be young and be happy. And it's the same thing that everybody in war wants, right?
Yeah.
What I want is remember in the last verse that we did last week, he said, and the children will play in the streets.
Right. Yes.
And all of this stuff, young people will be able to court each other in peace and not have the struggles that we're seeing there happening right now.
Yes.
Again. And God is making this promise to them. You're going to have this time of peace. Could it have been pointing to the Maccabean period? Maybe, but it's just hard to nail this stuff down.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, but it is a promise to them, and they're looking forward to this lovely time when they can just be who they are.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, awesome. Yeah, like you said, that's kind of, it's a perplexing but beautiful image.
Well, new wine, in case you're, you know, you're someone who doesn't drink, new wine was just grape juice.
Yeah.
So you're safe there. You're safe there.
Yeah. 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 I was just like, new wine and young women. I'm like, oh, okay. Let's flip over to chapter 10 now, folks.
We didn't say new wine and young women. He said the young women will drink new wine.
It's just what I took out of it. I'm sorry. The grain will make young men alive and new wine the women. There you go. That's what it says. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Now we put it back in context. Yeah.
This is not a barroom song.
Yes.
I hope.
All right. Well, why don't we flip over to chapter 10 now, folks, like I said. And let's start at verse 1 there. Ask the Lord for rain in the springtime. It is the Lord who sends the thunderstorms. He gives showers of rain to all the people and plants of the field to everyone. The idols speak deceitfully. Diviners see visions that lie. They tell dreams that are false. They give comfort in vain. Therefore, the people wander like sheep, oppressed for the lack of a shepherd.
Yeah, so they've been listening to false prophets. God's going to send good stuff to you. Stop listening to these false prophets. Listening to diviners, you know, listening to sorcerers, listening to, well, in our day, you could say astrologers and New Age stuff and all the stuff that came. Now, New Age is kind of old and passe now.
Yeah.
But it was there strong in the 90s, wasn't it?
Sure was. Yeah. Okay, verse 3. My anger burns against the shepherds, and I will punish the leaders. For the Lord Almighty will take care of his flock, the people of Judah, and make them like a proud horse in battle. From Judah will come the cornerstone, from him the tent peg, from him the battle bow, from him every ruler. Together they will be like warriors in battle, trampling their enemy into the mud of the streets, and they will fight because the Lord is with them, and they will put the enemy horsemen to shame.
Yeah, so they're gonna win whatever battles are coming. They're gonna win. The tent peg thing. I don't know if it means they're gonna set up their tent, or if it's a reference back to JL when she drove the tent peg through Cicero's head.
Oh, yeah, that would be kind of an illusion that everybody would get, right?
They would get that, and I'm wondering if that's what they, because it's put in the same context as the battle bow. You know, That was a tough woman. You know, she got him drunk. She gave him warm milk, right? And he fell asleep, and then she took a tent peg and drove it through his head.
Mm-hmm. I kind of love that story, too, right? It's like, hide me. Sure, have a sleep. Would you like some milk? Okay. Whack.
which some of the young women did to the soldiers in the Second World War.
Ooh.
They would kind of lure them in and then kill them.
Okay.
There were some very tough people that rise up in wartime.
Right.
But anyway, so he's saying that they are going to win this battle, these battles, right? Trampling their enemy into the mud of the streets. It's rough language.
Yeah.
Rough language. Yeah. Yeah. But when you get into war is a rough time.
Yep. 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 Okay.
It's all academic to you and me, Steve.
Yeah, that's right. Because
fortunately, it's just academic to us.
We're children of the late 20th century. We've never even had to think about war.
So,
and we're
watched it on TV.
Yeah, that's right. And we're Canadian too. It's like that's probably not going to be our experience. Okay, verse 6. I will strengthen Judah and save the tribes of Joseph. I will restore them because I have compassion on them. They will be as though I had not rejected them, for I am the Lord their God, and I will answer them.
Just stop for a second, because this is pointing back, and all the last three chapters we've done have pointed at this, right? Remember talking about the fasting. They would fast to remember the Assyrian captivity and the Babylonian captivity. And he was saying, your fasting in the future will be something of joy, not of sorrow. Mm. And he's coming back to that again. I'm going to restore you. It's not going to be like that time.
Right. Okay. Sorry, I lost where I was. 7. Thank you. The Ephraimites will become like warriors, and their hearts will be glad as with wine. Their children will see it and be joyful. Their hearts will rejoice in the Lord. I will signal for them and gather them in. Surely I will redeem them, and they will be as numerous as before. Though I scatter them among the peoples, yet in distant lands, they will remember me. They and their children will survive, and they will return. I will bring them back from Egypt, gather them from Assyria. I will bring them to Gilead and Lebanon, and there will not be enough room for them. They will pass through the sea of trouble. The surging sea will be subdued, and all the depths of the Nile will dry up. Assyria's pride will be brought down, and Egypt's scepter will pass away. I will strengthen them in the Lord, and in his name they will live securely, declares the Lord.
And it's kind of interesting because they came back from Persia, actually, right? The Persians defeated the Babylonians and very shortly after started allowing them to come back to Judah to rebuild Jerusalem. Zion is the hill that Jerusalem's built on. But he still talks about Assyria, right? Mm-hmm. And he still talks about Egypt, places where these are the lands where they were many, many years ago enslaved. They're no longer, there were still some remnants of Assyria left, but it had no power over them.
Mm-hmm.
So to say you're coming back from Assyria, sort of you're coming back from that original captivity.
Right.
Yep. Just like when they say you're coming back from Babylon, and we always said you're not. Actually, you're coming back from Persia.
Right.
But they would still use the term coming back from Babylon, coming back from Assyria, coming back from all of these places that the Lord had dispersed them to.
Right.
And now he's allowing them to come back. And lots of people don't come back. Right? It's just like right now, not all of the Jewish people went back to Jerusalem. Right. into what is Israel now. Most of them still live in the United States where life is good.
Yeah.
And they support their people back in Israel. So he's saying the people are coming back, but only a portion do come back.
Right. Right.
At any point in time. The rest stay in these countries and then get beat up in these countries over the centuries.
Yeah.
You know, which is kind of strange too. But someone said something interesting about the Jewish people. Said they, you know, for such a small, like 15 million in the world today, so many Nobel Prize winners are Jewish, and so many things have come out of Jerusalem and out of Israel.
Yeah.
That they're just really successful wherever they go.
Yeah.
You know, and it could be God's blessing on them, and it could be just the work ethic that they have.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to know exactly why. But when people get angry, they always get angry about this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
and beat them up for it.
Yeah.
And we're seeing it today again.
Yeah. Well, and I even think back to the point you made in chapter 9, as if you look at verse 12 of chapter 10 here, you know, I will strengthen them, and in his name they will live securely. And I wonder, is there a different meaning around that than what we're talking about? Is it they live with themselves securely in the book of life, or is it, you know, is there some sort of double meaning here from what we'd normally take it?
Yeah, and I don't see a double meaning as in they are secure, like spiritually.
Mm.
I think it's actually pointing to physical security, mental security, emotional security, which for some reason they don't have, you know?
Yeah.
Which is one of the strange things. And that guy from the Bible Project says that all the time. He says, maybe they're just not fulfilling what God is expecting every time. But I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how it works. We know that in the New Testament, Israel and the church are actually one. And that's one of the big things the New Testament writers talk about.
Right.
How you bring Israel Jewish and Gentile Christians become one thing.
Remember? Right.
But there still are promises to national Israel. There are promises in Paul where he talks about his Jewish brethren.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. It seems like the promises aren't fulfilled without the rest of us doofuses being a part of it.
Just dragging your sorry selves in here along with us. Fine.
Yeah. Like we're the wild olive branch, you know. We're all kinds of weird things. Yeah.
Yes, this motley crew that shows up outside your door. Well, fine, come in. Well,
yeah, go on in. We'll bring you along.
Yeah.
I guess we're supposed to. So, but still, amazing promises to the Jewish people. And remember, this is happening. He's doing all of this still in anticipation of the building of the temple.
Yeah,
the temple's being rebuilt, but there's still that is still coming. Is the building of the second temple. And this is the period of time that this is happening.
Okay.
So there was a time of peace for them.
Yeah.
Under the Persians, they seemed to have a time of peace.
Yeah.
Of relative peace, of limited peace.
Right.
You know, I mean, their own guys were fighting them back in these days.
Yeah.
Later on in Sennacherib and all those guys, remember?
Yeah.
Going to the king saying, hey, the Jewish guys are bad. We should do something about them.
Do something with these. Yeah, I'm related to them, but like it's a distant cousin. A distant
yeah,
cousin.
Yeah, like in Thor. He's adopted.
That's right. We found him on a picnic. Well, thank you, my friend. Is there anything else you wanted to say about this? I mean, it's just a good reminder of how God leads his people.
We muddled our way through, okay?
Yeah. This is just God calling his people back, making promises to them that he's going to call them back together, restore them. Well, folks, as always, we say this every week, but we're so thankful that you listen every week. It's an encouragement to us. We pray that you are encouraged by what you've heard Larry talk about. And just invite you back. Tell your friends if you want. We're just more the merrier. As you can see, we're not making anything off of this, clearly. Our production values show that we're not making any money at this, but we really enjoy doing this for you all. So thanks so much for listening. So on that note, next week we'll be back with two more chapters, and then the third week we'll finish off the book of Zechariah, and then we'll wish everyone a Merry Christmas. All in one fell swoop, as they say. Until then, I was Steve, he was Larry, and this was the Apocalypse Podcast.